This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 46, where I talk with Infinitely Infinite 3 about her essay Insecure. I hope you enjoy.
I'm Infinitely Infinite 3. I'm going to be reading Insecure from Young Writers Project. I turned 15 in exactly 16 days. I've turned 15 recently. That in and of itself is terrifying. Difficult to explain really, but I am a writer. That is my job, to explain, to entertain, to engage. And so here I stand, holding my innermost pains out to you all. I may not be able to walk through those doors and breathe as I should. I have no conscience when it comes to my own heart. And so it may explode, painting my bones with dark blood, blue until it spills out of me, just as I learned in school. I could not think of a better platform to express my fear, and so I have relocated my entire being to this website, packed up and left my bedroom and stored my soul in the curving edges of words, the slopes and curls and shelter I reach for in between them. I'm not ready to face my own demise. I'm not ready to step through the doors of my new school and call myself a high school student, all capitals, because this is important, yet. I'm not prepared for the benign smiles, the lingering looks, the disdain of upperclassmen that will surely come based upon being thrust into the fray at the bottom and also with my own reputation. My mother says in return to that, that in some ways high school is a chance to reinvent yourself, to begin again. I don't disagree, but how can I truly tell the world that I feel like this, that I look like this, that I live like this without their own old stained memories of me clouding their judgment? Mom says they aren't paying attention to my plight and shan't. I tell her that teenagers balance on strings of candy floss strung together with spite. My head quotes scientific studies at me. 40% of all of our memories are incorrect. My heart retaliates with the other 60. I've been waiting for a chance, I suppose, to disregard my anxiety. It isn't new, after all. My head was the same in the summer at the end of my fourth grade year. I assure you, however, that my reaction to a new environment was less poetic, diplomatic, if you will allow me the pretense. I applaud you all, those who have been through their first year and beyond, for your dedication. I also remind you that intelligence is not measured by the grades you receive, and to not be hard on yourself when you are beaten by those who should not have. Everyone is good at something, and writers do not have a talent for patience. They do, however, have a knack for procrastination, so don't forget to congratulate yourself. After you water those plants, sweep that floor. I'm still finding my place, and I don't know if I have quite yet, but I'm trying. I'm still trying. Oh, yeah, and I'm still kind of terrified of the prospect of thriving and dating. I get my license in not even 3 months, and I've got a boy I'd like to take out, though I am exceptionally shy when it comes to that sort of thing. Send help. Infinite.
Thank you so much. What was your inspiration for this?
In the last couple of weeks of summer, I started really thinking about like the new things that were about to happen to me. And I really began to kind of overanalyze everything. And I was like, this is what my life's going to be like from now on. Like, these are the people that I'm going to be with for the next 4 years. And it's going to matter what we do. It's going to be on my record. My grades are going to be put into the system. And it's going to depend on me getting good ones so that I get into the colleges I want to get into. And I was just freaking out. And I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So I just sat down, I'm like, okay, I'm going to write about it. And so I did. And I was like, and I sat there for like 25 minutes, 30 minutes, just like writing super quickly and just putting it all out, just spewing it out. And it got there. So yeah, that's how I came up with Insecure.
That's a great backstory to it. I have definitely had those moments like before a big thing in my life where I'm like, oh my God, this is like, this is happening. Like, I've been avoiding it. I've been telling myself like it's not gonna happen, and like here it is. Like, yeah, I just gotta go live through it. And that kind of hit me too over the summer, the same thing with college, although I'm a lot closer to it than you are, and finishing my degree and being 18 in a couple of months. Like, that freaks me out so much. And so it's like, yeah, like my life is happening to me. I'm gonna be buying a car in a couple of months. I don't have my license yet, but I'll be getting it around the same time. So like, I'm gonna have to take care of this big machine and like be responsible for that. And then at some point I don't know when, but at some point in the next couple of years, I'll be living on my own. I'll have to take care of myself. And like, you just get to a certain age and you get hit with this feeling of like, wow, like I'm a person. I have to do things and people aren't just going to hold my hand and like tell me how to do it anymore. And that's kind of pessimistic, but I think it's true. It's definitely something I've been thinking about.
Yeah, you know, it's terrifying. It's new stages of life. And I feel like you say, we are getting our licenses at around the same time. I get mine in November. But yeah, and I won't have the, like, no one trusts me to get my own car. And also, I don't want to spend that much money. So it's like, I'll be driving my parents, probably some of my grandparents' cars, you know, but it's still scary. Because like they're saying, like, unless you're driving to school or something that you need to go to, like dance or a sport or something, you have to pay for the gas. And if you wreck, you have to pay for the damage. And so it's like, it's first the responsibility of not killing myself. And then it's also the responsibility of like not ruining or wrecking the car. And then also the responsibility of paying for this. Well, I also have to pay for my phone bill and all these other things. So it's like, you know, big stuff, like big steps, you know, driving and continuing on through your high school career and then also, you know, meeting new people and making new friends.
Yeah. When I was younger, like 9, I would do like odd jobs for my neighbors. So I would like walk their dogs or feed their cats or water their plants while they're away, just like little things like that. And I always said I was saving up to buy a car when I was 17. And that was like when I was really young. So it's like always been a goal of mine. And now that I'm finally, you know, nearing 18, I'm like, I gotta do it before my 18th birthday. I gotta like fulfill this goal. I gotta like meet this deadline. And I just want to make my younger self proud, which is like a weird thing to say.
I totally get that too, you know. I mean, obviously I'm not turning 18 anytime soon. Turned 15 like 2.5 weeks ago. But yeah, I have friends who have recently turned 18 and they're all saying like, yeah, like exactly, like make my younger self proud. Be the person who I wanted to be. And, you know, and it's like, and it's also that thing where you're never alone. You're never alone because your older self is watching you through the memories that they have. And it's like that sort of thing. You're also never alone now because if you turn into the person that your younger self wanted you to be, then they're also watching you through their, you know, fantasies and all the new things that they're thinking about. And I don't know, I totally get it. I'm trying to be the person that I wanted to be every day because the person that I wanted to be was good. And, you know, we got to trust our naive young kid selves, right?
Facts. I agree. So to get back to your poem or essay, I love so many of these lines, like, I may not be able to walk through those doors and breathe as I should. I have no conscience when it comes to my heart. And so it may explode, painting my bones with dark blood, blue until it spills out of me, just as I learned in school. I feel like this is a good representation of your kind of writing style and how it's like really beautiful and a little bit dark, a little bit edgy. How did you kind of develop that voice, or did it just come to you naturally?
I think it's kind of a 50-50 thing. Like that's like me. And then also I read a lot of like kind of dark and macabre stuff. I recently got super into Emily Dickinson, who was like, you know, mistress of death and obsessed with it all and all these things. And it kind of like flows into my writing. And I don't know. And also I just kind of like that kind of thing, being overly descriptive and kind of edgy. It's fun.
I started my creative writing class this week and I was terrified to post my first bit of writing. I didn't like it. I still don't like it. And when I was reading through my professor's like comments on it, I was like, I should have changed everything. I have too many details in here. This is terrible. And I was like freaking out about it. And I was like, you know what? It's your first assignment. It only gets better from here. But yeah, I add a lot of details. I've realized that dialogue is not my thing in writing. I am not good at that and I hate it. So like I can describe things for days, but don't make me make other people talk.
Yeah, you know, like I've been writing a novel recently, or at least attempting to. And like every time it's like someone doing things or experiencing things or being in some sort of environment, I'm like, oh, okay, this is easy. And then when it comes to like actually having to speak to people, I'm like, I don't know, because also it's like in a totally different like era too. I'm writing it in like 1903. And that makes it difficult because I had a totally different vocabulary and totally different like social, you know, etiquette. So it's just, it's hard. And I totally feel you on that.
That's so cool though that you're writing a novel.
Thanks. I should send it to you.
Yeah, definitely. You should post it on YWP.
Yeah. I love, speaking of YWP, I love the reception I get from you guys. You know, it's really nice. Whenever like I post anything, at least one person will see it, or at least one person will, or it's like love it or heart it or whatever it is. And I feel so happy about it. And also I posted a couple of things. They're called The Will of the Wind. And I got a really good thing from Reed. And I felt so good about it because it was like there was dialogue in there. I was so scared to post it because I was like, oh my God, they're talking. Am I doing this right? Do they sound like real people or just like things on paper? And I was scared, but you know, it's like, I love how everyone on there is so supportive of each other. Like no matter in what like area of writing you're at, whether you're a total novice or in the middle and have some experience or totally advanced and you've been writing for years, you know, we're all so kind and it's so lovely. And I love it. I love it all.
Oh, that's so sweet. I was just about to ask about YWP, so perfect timing. But yeah, I love the line that you said. I'm guessing this is about YWP, about I've relocated my entire being to this website, packed up and left my bedroom and stored my soul in the curving edges of words.
Mm-hmm. That was definitely about YWP, you know, because it feels like a family. You know, I know none of you, and yet I know you so intimately because of the things that you put out. And it's like, I hear your inner voice. It's like when you write, I've always thought that the words that we put down are like an extension of our souls. And it's so cool to like see and hear all these people and the way that they think and the way that they write and the way that they experience and see the world. And it's just, it's great. So.
I agree about, you know, getting to know people, even though you've never met them. I think it's really cool. I think it's really neat that, you know, we're from all different places in the world, different time zones, different states, different countries even. And we all kind of come together with our writing. And I think the nice thing about YWP is that we're all young and we're all at the age and experiencing this time in our lives when like things are crazy, friends are weird, and, you know, we feel weird about ourselves, but there's this space where we don't have to feel that, where we can just share our writing and our art and our photography. And it's like the social kind of difficulties aren't there. You can interact with people, but without having that like worry and stress. The next thing I was going to say is I really relate to the paragraph about not being ready for high school, because that's how I felt about starting college early. The same thing about like the benign smiles, the lingering looks, the disdain of upperclassmen. I felt like that starting at college when everyone else is, you know, at least 5-10 years older than me. Felt very out of place. Felt like I do not belong here. Mm-hmm. And someone's gonna find me, they're gonna think I'm a fraud, I'm gonna be out. And that's kind of difficult to deal with, but I think that it's the same feeling when you start high school, when you start at any new place, a new job or whatever. Over time I just kind of realized that I guess I belong here, I guess I'm fine. I mean, no one's shut me out now, I've made it this far, I guess I can just keep going all the way until the end.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no one's tried to kick me out thus far, so.
So far. So the other thing is that my mother says, in return to that, that in some ways, high school is a chance to reinvent yourself, to begin again. I was always told that. And I was also always told that none of my friendships in middle school and high school would last. And so I would have friends, but we wouldn't be friends for longer than a couple of years. And I was really upset about that at the time. I was like, why are you telling me I'm not going to be friends with these people that I'm so close with? And it was true. It ended up happening. I'm not friends with anyone who I was friends with in middle school, except for like one person. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like the advice that you get about high school seems really harsh in the moment. And then you just realize that, like, yeah, that's pretty true, actually.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, like the whole, like, you don't keep the friends you knew in middle school. I have three that I guess I've been talking to for a long time, and I know them pretty well because, you know, I see this one because she lives in America all the time. And then the other ones I text and call all the time because they live in Canada and they can only come down for school because, you know, COVID stuff. But I'm hoping that doesn't happen. But also I've seen like so many like tight-knit groups kind of split apart, and you'll be like, wait, weren't they friends? And you're like, hold on a minute. And it's just, it's so weird because it's like, these are people that you thought you would be with for the rest of your, you know, education in the town that you're in at the moment. And then you realize that, yeah, we're going to shift so much. And regardless of the fact that you are with them for a long time may not mean that you will be with them, which is crazy to me because, like, I see these people every day and then I stop seeing them every day because I don't talk to them anymore. And then I shift to these other groups and I'm with them. And I don't know, it's crazy, but I feel like it'll also be helpful because I'm what you consider a floater, which, you know, like, I don't really have a set group. So it might be helpful because if I drift away from one group, then I always have these other ones.
Yeah. I think the other thing about growing apart and not being friends with people who you're friends with in middle school and high school is that I feel like high school is when you change a lot. Like, that's really when you become your own person. And mm-hmm. so a lot of my friends who I'm not friends with now, we're like attached at the hip when we were 11 and 12. Now we're like 17. It's like, God, we are not the same person. Like, we are so different now. It's like, how were we ever best friends? So like, it's hard to imagine that if we had changed the way that we had, that we would still be friends. You know, I think it was just mm-hmm. inevitable to not be friends anymore. Still, it's kind of sad looking back, like, oh, those are the good old days. And now I'm just missing them. But also not really missing them.
Yeah, both not and kind of missing people.
Like, I think it's missing the idea of them.
Yeah, because also it's like, once you move on, you move on. I mean, we're human and we'll go back. But at the same time, it's also like, there are other things in our lives that are changing, and there's reasons for everything, I think. So
the whole shift is weird to me. Anyway, beyond being existential about being a teenager, a line about teenagers that I really liked was, I tell her that teenagers balance on strings of candy floss, strung together with spite. Ooh, I was like, that's such a cool line of like thank balancing you on candy floss. And like, you know, it really does feel like being on, you know, a tightrope sometimes and like narrowly keeping yourself up without falling.
Yeah. And with spite too. There are a lot of people in high school who are like competing with each other to be the best or the prettiest or the coolest or the, in the case of boys, in the case of boys, they're like, you know, trying to be the strongest or, you know, the, I don't know, and this is the dorkiest word in the world, chick magnet, you know, but like those sorts of things. We're all competing to be something, and spite kind of comes in as an, like a, like kind of like the devil on your shoulder, you know, like you should be better than them. You are better than them. And it kind of turns into a, like a whole God complex, which I feel like a lot of teenagers kind of like manage to make without trying over time. It just happens. And that's like the good thing about growing too. It's like you can kind of come out of that sort of shell and realize that everyone is just trying to survive, you know, whether or not you look good or not, you know, it's, we're existing. We're not trying to be the best at anything. And if you are blessed with, you know, a genius mind, then great for you. But I have other things I'd want to do than try to compete with someone who I know has it really well. And, you know, there's no point in trying to compare myself to other people.
That's so true. And comparison is what gets you. Comparison is really that, like you said, the devil on your shoulder. Like, that person's so much better than me. And like, you know that they've got their own issues, they've got their own insecurities, but you still feel like, if only I could be like them. And if only mm-hmm. I could be a little prettier, a little bit smarter, a little bit hotter, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's a thing that I think a lot of people have. And not just in high school. I feel like a lot of that kind of goes beyond into college and into adulthood. And like, you know, you meet new people and you're like, they're so perfect, I want to be like them. And you're always like trying to, you know, be better than you actually are. And I think mm-hmm. that's difficult to deal with. And like, everyone always says, like, stay true to yourself, stay true to your values. I always heard that. But I think it is important. It sounds cheesy, but I think it is good advice. Just remember who you are. You're changing. Everyone else is changing. You don't have to be like someone else. Just be yourself.
The best part. Being yourself is like the most, like the easiest way to find people who actually like will value you and will be of value is just being yourself. And on that subject too, I wrote about driving and dating.
That was the next line that I was gonna talk about.
Yeah, like the boy. Oh my gosh, it's scary too. Like, you don't know if you're pretty enough or if you're cool enough or if you're, and all the mixed signals that I'm getting, sir, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, dudes are just, like, either give me something or don't. Don't be middle. I can't take middle if you're going to be an introverted jerk and not talk to me and get all awkward when I ask you questions. Can you do it on your own time, please?
I went through so many struggles like that when I was younger and very boy obsessed, but I was convinced I was in love with everyone and they were in love with me, and so I had a lot of crushes. I don't think I ever like acted on my crushes and really asked anyone out. Mm-hmm. I would be too scared for that. But you know, I was always like, oh god, he's looking at me, we made eye contact, oh my gosh, and I made it into like this big moment. And then, like, I get shy and, like, look away and start, like, giggling like I always do. And it was funny. It's funny looking back at it now. Like, I wish I could make fun of my younger self. Because it's like, no, you're making it up in your head. Like, that is not happening. These, like, imagined love stories.
Mm-hmm. And then it's like, there's totally the imagining part. Like, completely taking it out of proportion. Seeing people making eye contact with them a couple times. And then being like, oh. Are you harboring some sort of thing for me in secret? And it's like, no, dude, they are, yeah, no. And it's like, you know, how am I supposed to figure this out with people who, especially people who are introverted, because I am not, probably figured that out within the 30 minutes you've been talking to me. But it's just, it's hard too. And as a girl, like a guy, different gender than me, I can't figure out like all the signs and all the stuff. And it's just like, because you can't read them. Like if it was a girl, like that'd be easy, like, oh well, okay, she's not interested, whoops. But when it's guys, it's like, you are not like that. And introverted or not, it's still hard.
I wish I could get inside someone's head. You know, I just want to know what they're thinking. Like, oh wait, are you vibing with me? Are we vibing together? Or am I vibing? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on here? What's the situation? It's always so weird to talk to people. Like, talk to people that you're interested in, that you have a crush on. Like, you feel so awkward. You're so self-conscious about, like, at least for me, I'm, like, self-conscious about the way that I look and, like, the way that I talk. Every single word that I say, and I'm like, oh my god, they're looking at like all of my insecurities, and like that's the only thing they can see on me. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I'm like trying to gauge, like, are they interested in me? Are they just like talking to me because there's no one else to talk to? Like, are they naturally flirty?
Yeah.
Was that a flirty way of saying I like to read books too, or am I reading into it? I feel like when I was younger, like elementary school, middle school, anytime I liked someone, the only way that they would show that they liked me back was by bullying me, which is really sad. But like, I would always complain that like, this boy in my like after school program, he's so mean to me. He always bullies me. He always says this and this and this. And everyone would be like, oh, he's got a crush on you. And it's like, what? How does like having a crush on me translate into bullying me all the time?
Yeah.
Like that was so confusing to me.
I've also always thought that that was kind of like a toxic thing, you know? Like if they like you, they're going to be a jerk. And I'm like, but like if that happens, how's the relationship going to go?
Yes. It's very weird. Very confusing. It's like, it's also unwanted. It's like, if you're going to be into me, then be into me. Don't like try to start causing drama. Don't try to start like saying all these things to me that like actually offend me. Like,
yeah,
make a lighthearted joke for once, not like a really serious one.
Yeah. Or even like talk to me possibly.
At one point I was in like a writing group, I think when I was like 13 or 14, and anytime I made eye contact, because there's these like three boys and I liked pretty much all of them. And so anytime I made eye contact with any of them, I'd be like, oh my God, something's happening. And like, they wouldn't even notice it. There was one of them that I had the biggest crush on, and he had like really long eyelashes. And I'd just think about it all day. Like, we would have kids together and our eyelashes on the babies would be so pretty, because I have long eyelashes too. Like, it's going to be a genetic thing. I was crazy for a bit.
It's going to be a genetic thing. Oh my God. That's the best thing ever.
I had some interesting things going on. Back to our podcast, because I forgot about it for a bit.
Sorry. I hope y'all are entertained.
So how did you first become interested in writing?
I can't really say like the exact point, but when I got really into it, like when I started like just like doing it all the time, this is like my hobby, my thing, this is what I actually started getting known for it. I would show it to people. They'd be like, have you been writing recently? All my English teachers know me. It's scary. And the like really big pivotal point of my life regarding like writing was probably at the beginning of the pandemic, when I was bored and I didn't really have anything to do and we couldn't go anywhere. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to make something. I'm going to write about it. And so I wrote like a million novels and then deleted them because I hated them, and then continued and then got better with time. And it's so crazy, because I'll be like, yeah, it's been a year, but like 2022, sorry, is coming up really soon, and it's crazy. Like, bro, 2 days ago it was 2020 and I was really hoping it would be over, and now it's way over.
I just blacked out for like half of 2020. I don't think I was even awake.
I know, it's crazy, just on autopilot.
I remember quite vividly, I was walking across the campus of the University of Vermont, UVM, in Burlington with my dad, because my brother went there and I was maybe like 14, and we were walking across just by ourselves, and I was like, hey, in 2022 I'm going to graduate high school, and in 2026 I'm going to graduate college. And we're like, that's so crazy, it's so far away. And I'm like, we are months away from 2022. It is happening.
It's crazy though. Like, I can't, how, wait, okay. So I think you tried to explain to me how the senior and college thing worked, but like, how are you graduating college this year too?
I don't know any more than anyone else, honestly, but it's an associate degree. So it's 2 years. I started last fall. Everything was so crazy that it honestly didn't even occur to me that that would be crazy. Like, that was the most normal thing that was happening, was me starting college at 16. And the funniest thing is that I joked about it for so long, like for years and years and years, I would always joke about like being stereotyped as the homeschooler, because I was homeschooled, who went to college at 16, because that's like apparently a big stereotype. You start college early. And then it came true. And I was like, well, who's laughing now? Not me.
Wait, are you out of homeschool now?
Yeah, I'm not homeschooled. I'm full-time at community college. I'll have my associate degree in the spring, in June.
Wow, cool. I'm happy for you, you know? I mean, community college, man, that's crazy. 2 years, like, what are you going into?
Well, liberal studies is my major because they only have a few. I'd love to have done English or creative writing if that was an option, but liberal studies it was. I'm mainly taking English classes, though. Last semester, I had like 4 English classes, which was not the best decision, but a lot of fun. But then after, I'm definitely going to go into English/creative writing. But anyway, so this is an essay that we were talking about quite some time ago. Mm-hmm. What draws you to writing essays?
Well, poetry is scary. Like posting poetry is terrifying. I posted one, I think I posted, no, three, three, two or three in like my entire YWP career. And each of them has gotten a response, you know, they were like, cool, I'm glad you're doing this. And it wasn't my best, but now I've gotten really into poetry and it's been fun. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like poetry is super intimate, which is why I don't post it very often. Also because I'm just kind of an intimate writer. And I think it scares some people when I get super intimate. So I'd rather not post those things on like a public platform. And then novels or writing like excerpts or small chapters are also difficult because of dialogue and having to move the plot along and whatever. Yeah, you feel the struggle. So really, it's just like, I can write exactly what comes from my heart, and it doesn't have to be like a plot or move along smoothly. It just has to be me and what I think. And that's why essays are so lovely, because I don't have to like control the things that I say, because it's an essay, you know, and you don't have to be, you know, like in poetry, you don't have to be quite as candid, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like poetry is, again, intimate and candid without trying to be candid, whereas essays are kind of just like, you know, you read them, you feel the way that they feel, but you also don't completely connect, because I don't know, somehow. And then again, novels are difficult. I do not recommend writing one. I mean, it's fun, but it also sucks. And yeah.
I love that freedom that you described, just like being able to write whatever and not having to make it. I think there's like this assumption that poetry is pretty. And sometimes when you're writing, you don't want it to be pretty or beautiful. You just want it to be like your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice to have alternate ways of, you know, putting those thoughts down on paper.
It's rough. Every time I write a poem, it's like, whereas essays are my innermost thoughts, poetry is like the things that no one sees. Innermost thoughts are like, you know, can be shared. Whereas the next layer of my brain is like completely like closed off. Like, this is the part where I'm telling no one about. Like, you might know the things, but you don't know them enough. And I feel that's what poetry is. It's kind of like a outside, like a spewing again of, this is the smallest and most significant part of me.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. So what books, authors, essays, poems have shaped you as a writer and a human being?
Ooh, okay. I really love poetry about murder and death and dying. I actually have a book, like a whole book.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called Killer Verse, Poems of Murder and Mayhem. And then I really recently kind of got into religious stuff. I've actually always identified as, or I don't know if that's something you can say, identified, but I am agnostic. It's, you know, being in the middle, neither being atheist or Christian, just being like, I mean, possibly it could happen. I really just use religion and Jesus and God as like an outlet, you know, like something to kind of be intrigued by, but not also like worship. So I have a Bible in here. And then I have this, my mom's Latin book for dummies, that I use a lot to find inspiration. Kind of just like root words and stuff. And then for some reason, I've always found Latin to be so elegant. And then I also have a large book filled with all of Emily Dickinson's works, the entirety of her collection. And she's shaped me so much as a writer and a poet and just an overall person, because it's like, I think so much when I read her stuff. And then I go and write, and I feel like the best things that I write come from the things that I love, which is Emily Dickinson and poetry and prose and all these cool things. So
that's cool that you get inspiration from so many different places and different sources too. What have I been reading lately? I haven't been reading a whole lot because I've been busy with all my things. But I have a cool book story. I recently went to an estate sale, and it was the greatest day of my life because I found a book. It's this book, Charles Dickens' book. It's a history of England, like child's books, I think. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. It looks really old. I opened up the flap, and the inside page has a signature from an uncle to his nephew from 1888. And I was like, what? And I freaked out. And I was like, this is incredible. This belongs in a museum. No, it belongs in my room. And so then I bought it, of course. And it was like, I don't know, I bought a bunch of other things. So it probably ended up being like $1, which was incredible. And then I ended up finding the family who owned it through good old Google. It took me like 5 minutes to find a family tree PDF online. And so now I know who it belonged to. And it's so cool that I have this little piece of history.
That's awesome. Wow.
I am a stan of old books. I love them. I'm also an estate sale stan. I stan many things. I contain multitudes. So, you know, things are going great for me book-wise.
Wow, yeah. Like, Charles Dickens. Man was ahead of his time.
Man was interesting. But if I was like, if only this was a more well-known book. If only it was A Christmas Carol. If only it was Great Expectations. He has so many well-known books. Why is this the one that is not well-known? So I was a little disappointed about that. No, I don't want to touch it. I'm going to wrap it in saran wrap. Not actually, but I just want to preserve it. Like, if it's made it this long, I don't want to be the one that ruins it.
Fair enough. Go find like another version online. Read it on a Kindle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one last question. What is the best writing advice that you've gotten and the writing advice that you've hated?
The best writing advice that I've gotten is I have talent and I should utilize it and I should keep writing and don't overuse words. Don't be redundant. But if you need to, if the point arises that you must use another word again, be kind of finesse it, you know, kind of put it in there and make it sound cool. And then also use my vocabulary for good. You don't have to be pretentious, but totally get in some cool words in there and like make people think about it. And then the writing advice that I've hated has got to be that I ramble a lot. I kind of go off on a tangent, and that's not a lovely thing to hear. You know, it's like, oh, apparently I'm not as succinct as I thought I was. Oops. We're all writers and we're all different. And like I said, writers get distracted easily. And whether it be by like outside things, like, you know, stuff in our rooms or outside or people when you're writing in like a public place or even just like forgetting what you're doing and just writing for hours and then noticing that you have gone completely out of the way of what you were trying to do. So it was good advice, but I didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, I think the best advice I've gotten is, again, I had talent, I have potential. That really motivated me. I had a few English teachers who were like really, really supportive of my writing and really pushed me and really were like, you've got to make this a career. And I was like, thank you so much. So thank you to them. And the writing advice I've hated, actually another English teacher, I've got some beef with her, is that I use too many intangible words and phrases, too many metaphors, which, I mean, I know it's kind of just an excuse, but like, it's a stylistic choice. It's my style. It's a cop-out because yes, I do use a lot of intangible words and phrases and metaphors. But I think that's just who I am, man.
I think on the subject of like metaphors, I kind of do that, you know, like an Insecure balancing on strings of candy floss, or having, you know, blood curl around you and then pour out, you know, that sort of thing. But I mean, I've always really loved that sort of writing. I feel like being succinct is boring.
That's sometimes what I think. I was like, well, how else do you want me to write it? Like, do you want me to take out all the interesting parts? And I think also the other thing is that I love writing so much and I don't take criticism easily. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want my writing to be ruined by someone else's criticism. And mm-hmm. so that's why I'm like very protective of my writing. And that's why I was nervous to start my creative writing class. And, you know, at the end of the day, I respect teachers and authority figures. However, it's my writing. And so if I like it, I like it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the best writing is the writing that you like. We are all so hard on ourselves that when we actually truly enjoy reading the things that we've written, we know that we can admit that they're good. Or like, you know, like if you look in the mirror and you know you're pretty, you're like, oh, wow, I am. Because I am so very hard on myself that I can't see it most of the time. Or I'm actually not stupid because I got this super great grade on this test. Like, you know, it's like proving ourselves to ourselves, which I think is the most difficult thing to do. So
exactly. Well, this has been such a fun time talking with you.
I know.
Thank you so much for joining me on this podcast episode.
No problem.
This has been episode 46 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed and stay tuned for episode 47. Bye!